Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name's Paul Rees-Mandel, and I'm your host. On today's program, leaving corporate television news to produce independent documentaries. My guest today is Ken Schreiner, who used to be news director at Nexstar's Champaign, Illinois station WCIA-TV, and who is now an independent film producer. We'll talk about his films, why he left corporate TV, and he'll tell us more about what TV owners like Nexstar and Sinclair are really up to. But first, we'll catch up with what's going on in our media environment with some Media Geek headline news. Do stay tuned. Communications legislation at the state level tops the news this week. New Jersey has become the second state to make unlicensed radio broadcasting a state felony, following Florida, which passed such a law last year. The New Jersey State Senate voted in favor of the anti-pirate bill unanimously, 38-0, and Governor Richard Cody signed it into law on January 13th. The law had been pushed for hard by the New Jersey Broadcasters Association, whose members are feeling pinched by large broadcasters from New York City on the north and Philadelphia on the south, which dominate much of the state's airwaves. Apparently, the NJBA can't get a law passed outlawing out-of-state broadcasters, so instead they took aim at unlicensed ones, although there is no indication that pirates are as rampant there as they are in Florida, which is largely acknowledged as the nation's hotspot for pirate radio. Now that unlicensed broadcasting is a crime in New Jersey, local and state law enforcement are permitted to track down and shut down unlicensed stations. No doubt the NJBA intends to aid police with the tracking down part of the equation. According to the NJBA website, the association is planning to distribute commercials for member stations to air, quote, alerting listeners to this new law and what to do if a pirate station interferes with their favorite local station, end quote. Over in Indiana, the state Senate is looking at a bill that would radically deregulate telecom law there. The Homeland Security Utilities and Public Policy Committee approved by an 8-2 vote a bill that would let telephone companies set their own rates without state intervention as soon as 2009. If passed, the bill would also move cable TV franchising to the state level, similar to what happened in Texas last year. Such a change would limit the ability of local municipalities to push for public service and public access channels in exchange for companies' use of the public right-of-way. The bill would also further hamstring municipalities by placing restrictions on their ability to deploy broadband networks. Supporters of the bill, including former Republican House Majority Leader Dick Armey, who testified in front of the Indiana Senate Committee, argue that radically relaxing the rules would bolster competition. But opponents of the bill argue otherwise. Linton, Indiana is one of only two cities in the state with its own broadband network. Linton Mayor Tom Jones said the bill's stiff rules for municipal broadband networks would deny citizens access to new and developing technologies. The Indiana bill represents just one battle in a nationwide war the telecommunications industry is waging to get states to individually deregulate their industry and pull power away from local municipalities to the state level, where lobbyists have more access and centralized resources. Currently, the FCC is exploring the issue of cable TV franchising, mostly with regard to whether or not local municipalities are, quote, unreasonably refusing to grant competitive franchises, end quote, and if the FCC should intervene at the state or local level. The Center for Digital Democracy warns on its website that the true intent of the proposal in front of the FCC is to, quote, overturn perhaps the most important remaining public interest media safeguard, end quote. The center notes that, quote, local franchising is the only method that can ensure that the public is even modestly served by the communications giants, end quote. The FCC opened this proposal for rulemaking last November and is accepting comments from the public until February 13th. To learn how to send your comments to the FCC, go to the Media Geek website, www.mediageek.net, and click on Comment to the FCC on the right-hand column. In the last few weeks here on Media Geek, I've been talking quite a bit about the concept of network neutrality, which is where broadband providers don't block content to subscribers, even if it's not something they directly profit from. The issue has been coming to the fore in recent months because the big telephone companies, like AT&T and Verizon, are getting into the business of providing cable TV services over internet lines, and they're making noises like they don't want their subscription services to have to compete with free and competitors' video on the internet. On January 6th at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, FCC Chairman Kevin Martin came out strongly against broadband internet providers filtering content to subscribers. In a public question and answer session, Martin said, quote, "It is critical that consumers continue to have the access and unfettered access to all of the internet," end quote. He continued saying, quote, "I think that Washington and policymakers will be concerned if we are talking about network providers blocking access to content," end quote. Martin stresses that the FCC is going to be committed to network neutrality. However, he was hesitant to commit the FCC to making rules to enforce network neutrality, saying that he doesn't have evidence that any internet content is being blocked now. Martin also drew a distinction between network neutrality and tiers of service. He told the CES audience, quote, "Some want a lower speed, and for other consumers, it may be worth more to them to pay for a better quality of service or better speed," end quote. That attitude worries public interest advocates who foresee a two-tiered internet that reserves rich audio and video content for the wealthiest customers. Indeed, dividing the internet by access speed and bandwidth may be the way the big telcos can effectively filter content without explicitly filtering content. As I mentioned last week, companies like Verizon and AT&T are trying to charge big internet companies like Yahoo and Google for the bandwidth used by the videos and other media content they provide to consumers. Such a policy may give the telcos a way to block content from websites that don't pay their fee, most likely to be non-profit and amateur sites that don't have the profits or revenues of the big dot-coms. On January 10th, Bell South Chief Executive Officer Dwayne Ackerman told the Citigroup Entertainment, Media, and Telecommunications Conference that as more bandwidth-intensive content is available online, broadband providers will have to negotiate more with content providers, concluding, quote, "There will ultimately need to be some commercial agreements established," end quote. 2 weeks ago, guest John Anderson and I discussed an Iowa group's challenge to the license of a Sinclair-owned TV station in Cedar Rapids. On January 11th, three groups sent a letter to the FCC chairman urging the commission to be careful with rubber stamping the license renewals of TV stations. The Campaign Legal Center, the Benton Foundation, and the United Church of Christ are concerned by comments made by FCC Media Bureau Chief Donna Gregg that expediting the license renewal process will be a priority at the Bureau. According to the group's letter, quote, "For broadcasters to be effective public trustees, the FCC must appropriately exercise its statutory responsibility of holding them accountable for fulfilling their public interest and programming obligations," end quote. Already, license renewals for broadcast television stations are largely a pro forma process, although in the last couple of years, viewers groups have taken to challenging the licenses of stations they believe are not providing adequate public service in the form of news and public affairs programming. Although all broadcast stations are by law supposed to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity in exchange for their free license, since the Reagan administration, this has become a mostly toothless admonition rather than an enforceable requirement. And that's a bit of what's gone on in our media environment in the last week. You're listening to Media Geek, and you can check us out online at www.mediageek.net. You can also get the program online there at radio.mediageek.net. It's podcastable, so you can get automatically downloaded to your PC or your iPod or other MP3 player. Or you can just download it the old-fashioned way by clicking on the links. And at MediaGeek.net, there's also the Media Geek blog, which has lots of news and information that we don't have time for on the program. If you have any comments about the program, send them along to me, Paul, at MediaGeek.net. And I do want to note that there have been problems with the MediaGeek.org domain, which I speak about on the program frequently. But all the same content is available at MediaGeek.net. So if you have problems with the MediaGeek.org, go to MediaGeek.net. Coming up in just a moment, we'll be speaking to independent video producer and former corporate news executive, Ken Schreiner. Do stay tuned.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Imagine all the people living for today.
The color girls see. Take a walk on the wild side.
You know, he may not be the best president we've ever had, but he's certainly one of the most multi-talented. Yeah. He really must. You know, he rides bicycles with Lance Armstrong, and he can throw out a mean John Lennon cover.
I think
there.
He played rhythm with Stevie Ray Vaughan, too.
You know, yeah, I think he did. Only was that the cocaine-fueled tour that Stevie Ray had back there in the early 80s?
Well, you know, that's like Clapton. That's when he did his best work.
Exactly. So welcome back to Media Geek. I'm Paul Riespendel, your host. And we just heard, I think those folks are called the Party Party with Imagine by George W. Bush. And my guest in the studio here live is Ken Schreiner. And you're a former news director here at WCIA. Channel 3, the CBS affiliate in Champaign-Urbana, owned by Nexstar. And you're also going out and doing independent documentaries, which you're now posting on the web.
Yeah, the reason I did that is because, number one, I believe in the internet as being the medium of the future for distributing everything, not just what we're doing now. But I also ran into some... I don't want to say problems, but when you go to Hollywood and when you go through the independent film food chain to try to get something distributed, the process can go on forever, and sometimes it can never be resolved, and it can get hung up on all sorts of things like licensing and copyright, and the distributor decides that he doesn't like the promotional scheme and so on and so forth. And it just there have been all sorts of horror stories out there about people trying to get their independently produced films, documentaries, what have you, distributed, and they've just been an utter failure. And I've been reading quite a bit and seeing online for myself many successes as far as launching and distributing video projects, audio projects, what have you. And so I decided to try it myself. I put it up there on Christmas Eve, and I honestly don't know how many people have seen it. I haven't put it out as a podcast yet, which is far more... accurate way of gauging who's downloading it, who's watching it, so on and so forth. But I'm probably going to be doing that here in the next week or so.
Well, and why don't you tell us more about the documentary that you just posted?
This documentary is named Our Other Neighbors. I shot it in Maine in 2004 during the spring and during the fall. And what it does, hopefully, is show first how our attitudes toward the environment and nature have been self-destructive for several hundreds of years and have brought us to the point now of self-annihilation, what with global warming and all of our other environmental problems, urban sprawl, so on and so forth. But it's also designed to show how the state of Maine has altered its attitudes of self-destruction over the years because of one very popular and controversial animal, and that's the moose. This has become sort of a petri dish, if you will, for a new model for sustainable living, not just for the animals, but for the people, because... briefly stated, the industries that used to support government and people living in Maine, like paper, logging, have fallen on hard times. And so now, ironically, after people just about wiped out moose 100 years ago, more and more of them have come to depend on moose because of the tourism that moose attract because of the souvenirs that are out there. I mean, look at all the moose websites. Moose are kind of an icon in popular American culture, and rightfully so. They're the largest mammal on the North American continent, although they're also in Europe. They are arguably the most iconic of animals in America. More people can see moose than have ever seen a bald eagle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, with that in mind, I decided. Well, first of all, because of the religious and political connotations of our attitudes toward nature and. And because of the way I produce it and some of the topics that I touch on, I found that I was telling a story that was probably not ready for prime time. cable, Animal Planet was probably not going to put it on because it didn't have sharks.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't going to get on Discovery Channel.
No one got eaten in there.
Yeah, right. It was maybe just a little abstract for people, but there's great video of moose in there. I was within... as far as I am from you, 7-8 feet from a moose taking its picture, and Maine is just a spectacular place. And I put all that in there. I wrote the music and composed it and performed it, all based on my experiences in Maine too. So the music is a byproduct, a direct byproduct of my experience in Maine. So I think that it meshes very well with the pictures that I shot and with the subject matter. So all that having been said, the internet was a great place, I thought, to debut it.
Did the music? Did you do everything yourself?
I shot it.
Director, photography, everything.
Yeah, I did everything.
And then you did this on prosumer gear.
Yeah, well, this is I have my own studio at home.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Photoshop, mm-hmm. Adobe Premiere.
You shoot on like a mini DV camera.
Yeah, I use Canon products.
Okay.
I can use all of them, but the Canons
that are accessible to a lot of people.
Right. Yeah, it's pro stuff, but it's not unaffordable.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And this is part of the point. I found that I was able to do a better job with the stuff that I had than I ever would have been able to do if I worked at Channel 3, say.
Well, and so this is the irony here, because unlike a lot of first-time or a lot of people doing documentary work on the internet or doing independent documentary work, you've worked in the mainstream media for many years, and you have an extensive background in broadcast journalism.
I was a broadcast journalist for 30 years. I started back in the early 70s and started shooting on film, and I've been all over the world covering stories. I've been at the bottom of the rung, and I've been at the top of the ladder in the newsroom. So there's not much I haven't experienced as a TV news person over the years, and of course have seen some of the most incredible stories ranging from Watergate to 9/11 during that time.
But you work primarily at local affiliates?
Yeah, I worked on the network level. I did consulting for CNN, for NBC, and that was very beneficial, I think, for both of us, because it gave me a look at the network level and helped me decide that I didn't want to work at the network level.
So you're no longer, but you're no longer in broadcast journalism. You're longer in TV news.
No.
Why?
A couple of reasons. One, I found that it was extremely difficult for broadcasters to stay on the cutting edge of when we didn't understand the new emerging technologies and we weren't willing to spend the money to teach ourselves and to stay ahead of the curve. Number two, I didn't like the direction that broadcast journalism was going in. There are a couple reasons for that. The sensationalism, which is partly my fault, something I probably could have done something about, but you know, I fell into the trap too, but also because of the simultaneously expanding and then rapidly diminishing revenue stream in broadcasting. Broadcasters were flush with cash in the 80s and 90s when they should have been spending money on the new technology, which they did to an extent for digital cameras and digital recorders and so on and so forth. But then in the 90s, when the internet arrived and when cable expanded and when the satellite networks all started, when DVDs and VHSs proliferated, that all stopped. And then we started seeing layoffs, cutbacks, and there
and
was
consolidation.
And consolidation, true. And so that all sort of combined to make me feel like I was not able to do what I wanted to do on the air anymore, and I never was going to be able to do that again or do better than that because of the crumbling infrastructure that we saw in broadcasting, and that is accelerating today.
Did you see a change in, like, editorial strictures?
I implemented them. Well, the problem there was the economic realities. We could not operate as an independent newsroom making judgments of what was important to the community based on what we thought was right, but based on what the general manager and what the economic contingencies were. If it came down to reporting on a local advertiser, something that the advertiser was not going to like one way or the other, and the general manager found out about that, that story would just get not done. And if and this happened several times while I was news director at Channel 3, if we ran a story that the general manager didn't know was coming and it upset an advertiser, I was the first one to hear about it, and of course I was threatened several times with my job if I ever let it happen again. So I think the major impact on broadcast journalism in the last 15 years has been the heavy-handedness with which non-news-related administrators have operated to keep the revenue stream going from local advertisers, but at, of course it was at the detriment of an informed electorate and society.
And so did you see a change happen as ownership changed? You know, as stations became increasingly owned by companies?
Yes.
That were, like, Nexstar just grew like a crazy. Yes. Over the last, 5-6 years?
Yeah, and I think there's a reason they grew that fast. They had a very draconian and highly focused direction. That
just
was,
go and acquire,
yeah,
and acquire.
News did not fit into that. News is it wasn't even an afterthought. Well, if they could get rid of the news departments, they would.
But, well, why do they keep the news departments?
Because it keeps the FCC off their back.
So they want to make
that's
sure.
That's the only reason Sinclair, who runs Channel 15, right, and Channel 20 keep a newsroom operating. It keeps the FCC off their back.
But, you know, you can do a little bit, or you can do more. And Channel 3 in particular here in Central Illinois, you know, your news leader. I mean, they make a big advertising.
They can say anything they want, can't they?
But, you know, they seem to make a big deal of it. It's not just a matter of going.
No, it's promotion. It's marketing. Yeah. It doesn't even have to be true. We know that. Come on, look at Hollywood. The best motion picture ever made. Whenever somebody says it's the best motion picture ever made, it usually isn't, which brings us to your news leader.
So I'm speaking to Ken Schreiner. He's a former news director for WCIA Channel 3, a Nexstar-owned station here in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. He is also an independent video producer, producing independent documentaries on his website, which is...
Well, the website is SchreinerVideo.com.
SchreinerVideo.com.
That's spelled S-C-H-R-E-I-N-E-R. You know, the Germans always have to do everything hard. It's everything.
Lots of consonants.
Yeah,
all put together. So so you're aware of the fact, and we talked about on the Media Geek radio show last week, that last week, Nexstar, on two stations, one in Terre Haute, Indiana, and one, I believe, in Little Rock, Arkansas, said they weren't going to air the NBC series called The Book of Daniel. Now, they had received complaints from, you know, the American Family Association, other right-wing religious interests over, they hadn't seen it yet, but were worried about its depiction of religion and God and Jesus and things like that. But it looks like, instead, it's Nexstar trying to assert itself with the network.
Well, if you know the people who run Nexstar like I do, you're correct.
So then the one guy who stood out, and we talked a little bit before we were on air, this guy, Dwayne Lamers, who is the, who is the GM of WTWO, which is the affiliate there in Terre Haute, Indiana, not far from here, but also a VP for Nexstar, the corporate entity. And he admitted pretty much to Media Week that this had nothing, that that the reason that they were not going to air it was had nothing really to do with the right-wing pressure.
No, no.
So what's their plan here? What are they up to?
They are not alone. And again, I'm not trying to avoid Nexstar here, but all of the large conglomerates are taking on the networks because of the business model, you know, paying for programs when, you know, they feel they should be getting money from the networks to run these things. And they may be correct. Again, given the old advertising model that they're working on, which isn't working anymore, these stations are dying. That's not to say that the networks aren't dying, too, but broadcast is hurting. It's indisputable.
Yeah, Nexstar, Sinclair, they're not running a profit.
Exactly. So it's not just a Nexstar thing. If there was a, I bet you there, I think there are other stations and other groups that have refused to run Book of Daniel for whatever reasons. This is not unprecedented. There have been other shows, Wonderland and so on and so forth, that have suffered the same fate. But times are different now, and I think you're right. This is about, it's like a playground standoff. They are saying, "Oh yeah, well, you're going to shove this down my throat. Well, we'll see how that all comes out." And they're not going to let it happen because you're right. The networks and the affiliates are in this standoff mode. And if there's any kind of incitement as to any kind of battle, it's going to be engaged.
Well, Ken, thank you very much for coming on. Once again, your website is ShrinerVideo.com, ShrinerVideo.com.
If you want to see previews of the documentary, of course, it's available on DVD, and I'm hoping to get it distributed nationally and recognized. Of course, that's only one of the documentaries I've done, and some of them have run on cable TV stations around the country, for which I'm grateful. But this one is particularly important, and I think everybody, especially school, religious, and hunting groups, should see it.
Very cool. And, of course, there are links from the Media Geek website, www.mediageek.net. And right now I'm running a survey, actually, a poll on the radio site, radio.mediageek.net, because I want to know more about what you all, the listeners here, would like to hear more of on the program. So there's a little poll you can take. Go over there and give us a vote. I'd like to know. That's radio.mediageek.net.
That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in 1 week with more news of our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at www.mediageek.org. There you'll find the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views on independent media. You'll also find archive editions of the program in MP3 and the open source Ogg Vorbis format. You can also subscribe to the podcast to have the program automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Luo. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Portions of the program are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. Media Geek is also aired on community radio stations KQRP in Salida, California, KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, and WRFA in Jamestown, New York. And Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial or community radio station, too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.org. You can use that email address to send comments too. I'm always interested to know what you think of the show. Again, that's Paul at MediaGeek.org. Thanks for tuning in.